Welcome to the Are You Menstrual podcast, where we dive deep into all things women's health to support you on your healing journey. I'm Amanda Montalbo, functional and integrative dietitian, also known as the Hormone Healing RD. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want to keep learning, check out the podcast Patreon, where I share a bonus episode with additional downloadable resources each week. You can go to patreon.com/hormonehealingRD or check out the link in the show notes. Our goal with this episode is to create a very extra special episode just for moms, specifically trying to deal with this often like hidden stress load of motherhood. And, you know, I love being a mom. I know Amy loves being a mom. It's truly the greatest gift, but it doesn't mean it's not incredibly challenging. It's like the best thing you'll ever do and the hardest thing you'll ever do. And I think as a society, we don't get enough support for moms. We just kind of expect them to do everything and be able to handle it all. And then when their health falls apart, everyone's like shocked. But in reality, that's really what we're set up for. So we're going to start out. Amy's going to share her background. I think a lot of you will connect with her story. And I just think it's so important to know like where she's coming from, because it's really easy for us to have this conversation. We're both in the health field. We care about women's health and moms specifically. So Amy's going to go through her background. Then we're going to talk about crafting the culture in your home and how you can adjust that. And then we'll get into more like the practical tips. So as always, this episode is for informational purposes only. Please make sure if you make any nutrition, health changes, or anything like that related to this episode, you clear them with your doctor first. All right, Amy, give us your background. Tell us your story. How did you start wanting to support moms?
Well, first of all, I'm so pleased to be here. This is a true honor, and I hope that everyone will get some information from my story and be able to make changes in their lives, because it doesn't matter where you're starting. All of the little things that you're doing will add up to be big changes down the line. And like I always say, it's just about consistency and being consistent with your changes. And that's what I did. And all of a sudden, little things start to happen. So looking way back with my first set of twins, they just turned 13. And I remember after having them, I had a complete shift in my persona, of course, entering now into motherhood. But physically and biologically, I had so many issues, so many I didn't even know how to express them into words. So when I went to my follow-up appointment with my doctor and they asked, how are things going? Of course, I smiled and said, oh, everything's great. Like, I love all of it. But inside, I was literally just hanging on by a thread. I felt anxious. I felt completely overwhelmed. I felt so disconnected from myself. It was just this very strange feeling. And even now, I struggle to put it into words, but I can even feel, like, just looking back now, I can get all those feels. I physically was incredibly exhausted, like beyond any type of exhaustion I've ever experienced. Of course, I was nursing two babies and up at all hours. And with twins, you're on a consistent schedule. So it's every 3 hours for many, many months. At least that's the system that I use, right or wrong. And I was not feeding myself well. I didn't know at that time how to feed myself. I didn't know how to move my body. I had no idea about pelvic health, physical therapy, even though I had been in a personal trainer at that point for 10 years. And I had a degree in nutrition, but I still had no idea what to do. And so it wasn't too long after all of that where I started trying to find answers on my own, because I went to a counselor and she told me I just was anxious, a new mom. It's totally normal. But I decided that I didn't want that to be my normal, because I couldn't carry my boys around. I would see other moms at like the grocery store and see them smiling and happy. And I was literally struggling. Every time I would go to the store with two babies, I'd have two car seats trying to get them in the grocery cart. And then at that point, then dragging a double stroller behind. And it was so hard. My back hurt, my body hurt. And I didn't even know where to begin, because I'd never experienced that level of dysfunction globally in my life. So about 11 months after, I didn't know which way to turn. So I went out to California and visited with a mentor. I know that was a huge leap from local, and I told him, I said, I felt like my whole body was just twisted. And I felt like foundationally, the thing that was making me the most exhausted and causing me the most stress, it wasn't having two babies. It was my body feeling so dysregulated. And so right there, I started to frame the foundation of what I'd had no idea would become the entire course of study for the next decade. And then also helping women was trying to figure out how to move better and to function better in the world that I needed to move in. It was no longer about racing, which was my background, and athleticism. It was about, how am I going to function for life? How am I going to sit down on the ground and pick up my child from the ground without my back hurting and then feeling so wiped out because I had to stand in the kitchen and cook? I wanted to do all the things. So he looked at me and he had no idea about diastasis either at that point, or didn't diagnose it. But he said, your tendons, all your tissue, he was a soft tissue specialist, felt like complete like ropes. He said, I've never felt anything like this. This is a guy with many, many, many hundreds of thousands of, you know, hours of experience. And I was like, what is causing this? He said, I think you should try this new thing called paleo. I'm like, what's that? And of course, I was looking for anything with a strategy, because at that point, as a mom, you know, Amanda, you want, just give me the list and then I'll do the list. I don't want 10,000 different things. I just need a list. And he said, you eliminate these things. So I was like, great, I can do that. So I started right away because I felt so bad. I had never in my life felt so terrible. And so I just started pulling things because I had no money to start pouring into supplements. I had no idea about any supplements at that point, other than taking my multivitamin. And I started removing things. So I strategically removed gluten. And then he said, look at this thing called Weston Price. Start studying Weston Price. So I found a CSA and I started adding in raw milk and I started adding in organ meats and I just changed everything. And it took time and just consistent effort. And very little by little, I would be able to do more things. And I was sleeping deeper and I found myself starting to laugh again. This was over years. This was not over like, this wasn't over like a month or a week. This was years of just believing and trusting in the process, because I knew there was no alternative to this path because of everything I was learning. It just made sense on a principle level, on a soft tissue level, a connective tissue. I knew my fascia was completely disrupted. And then I learned about pelvic floor and diastasis, and I started weaving these things in and using my background in applied functional science and starting to put together the pieces and what I just termed as are my pillars, which you have that word's everywhere now. But I focused on those. I had no time to look for immediate changes because that I was framing the structure in my world. And I just kept on layering in and stayed consistent. And then it came time to feed the boys, and it came time to where they were done nursing. My girls nursed for 2.5 years. The boys nursed for about 11 months and were done. And so when I started to learn about all these things, it was right about the time it was going to feed them. So then I started thinking about, how am I going to make this doable? Everybody has to do it. My husband's a different story. He had his own time frame, but like with the kids, I knew that what I was learning, I needed to implement with them as well. Because of our family history of mental illness, and then later to learn that their dad has celiac, and all of these things I was learning, I knew would help them build a stronger, more resilient system. And also knowing that going into that pregnancy, I did not have the best mineral reserves, which I knew nothing about at that time, or gut health, which is why my postpartum experience was what it was.
I was going to say, do you want to give a little bit of background about like before you even conceived your twin, just to give people insight? Because it's like, well, you know, why was postpartum so challenging? And I feel like when you hear your history, you're like, got it.
Yes, it won't take you long to figure out why, because I spent probably 12 years in consistent high stress state from, you know, different life events in the family going on that were extremely high stress. I was diagnosed with ADD when I was in middle school, but later to look back and knew that it was non-celiac gluten sensitivity, 100%. In addition to just a stressful world that I grew up in. And then you couple that with a high, like everything I sought out was adrenaline. So it was racing at the highest level, road bikes, you know, racing, long endurance, trail races, anything that was dangerous, risky, high speed, I did it. And I did that for years. And Then I decided I was going to get pregnant and I had no menstrual cycle. So I had to use ovulation stimulation shots to stimulate it because I had hypothalamic amenorrhea for 15 years and was told that by my doctors that axis is fried. You know, there's nothing you can do to fix it. And so I went ahead and little did I know that going forward with that, not trying other, I thought I tried everything, which was nothing. And then little did I know that I was setting myself up for, you know, a very high risk pregnancy and then putting my children at risk too. I was very fortunate to be born with two healthy babies. But I will say that the boys were significantly different in manner than the girls. That's beside the point from this. But yeah. But my history going into it was 100% depletion, nervous system dysregulation. Just everything was stimulant, stimulant, stimulant. So I was depleted, depleted, depleted going into it.
It's like that. When I had Irene Lyon on, she talked about functional freeze and how when you're in that mm-hmm. frozen state of your nervous system, you seek out that cortisol, that adrenaline. And so it sounds like you were stuck in that functional freeze, which would make sense if, you know, it's like if you had a lot of stress and your body was, you know, couldn't get out of that state. It was like frozen, trying to preserve and save itself. And then you're just like trying to find that stimulation because, you know, it's normal for us to go in and out. But when you're stuck, you'll try to find it in other ways. So I know that that's like a part of your background. I think that's just important. And I think a lot of people mm-hmm. will honestly relate to coming to that place and then having that challenging postpartum. So you're learning how to feed your kids. You're like, okay, how am I going to do this? And then you had your girls like 4 years later.
Yes, I did. And just to that point, that episode was just fantastic. And because also because I could identify with much of it, but I think it does relate to a lot of women because mm-hmm. I was on stimulant medication in addition to these stimulating events since middle school until about 2 years before I had the boys when I pulled myself off of it because I got tired of it.
Yeah.
And that overdrive then pulling out that stimulation, it speaks to the healing process as well, because when you go through that healing process, you come out of fight or flight, you're going to feel more tired for a while mm-hmm. because you're not running on adrenaline and cortisol. But mine was a whole nother level of it. So yes, so I started implementing like crazy and everything started changing. And I would go to the park and I realized, gosh, like just 2 years ago, I remember standing in this exact spot and feeling, how can I even do nap time? How can mm-hmm. I do the rest of my day? Just feeling so exhausted. And I would use food as a stimulant too, because my blood sugar was so dysregulated for so long. Because I had such low adrenal dysfunction. Like I do the Dutch test or I don't remember. It was very old school adrenal testing. I can't remember the practitioner's name.
Like a salivary panel.
Yeah, the old school salivary panels, like just flatline completely. Yeah. And that's how I felt. So I'd go meal to meal for energy. And as soon as that meal time would come up, it would. And you can't do that with kids because you got to have some flexibility around that time because you're feeding your kids. I had none. I had no cushion whatsoever. And that didn't work with twins. And so when I had the girls, or when I was going to have the girls, I still had hypothalamic amenorrhea. So I used ovulation stimulation, but I prepared a little bit better for it that time. Not as well as I know now and what I teach moms mm-hmm. now, but a little bit better. And so I achieved pregnancy quickly with that, or we achieved pregnancy quickly with that. And then had the girls, and that pregnancy, I nourished my body a lot more, did all the things for diastasis care. And postpartum was a completely different experience, especially since the girls were born early and they were in the NICU. I know now that I had H. pylori at the tail end of that pregnancy, which I'm quite sure stimulated early delivery. And that was a very stressful time. So that first part of I spent the first 8 days in the NICU with them. They were given antibiotics and all of the formula feeds and everything to my horror. And I stayed there at the hospital with them and wouldn't leave and nurse them for those first 8 days. Slept in a closet in the NICU, basically. And that was horrible. And so I knew that all of that stress needed to be then accommodated with my going back to 2 4-year-olds. And then now we're in this new sleep cycle again, where we're pumping and nursing every 3 hours again, now with newborn preemies. And that would go on for the next 8 months. So I had sleep disruption for 8 months. I had a huge diastasis. And I had 2 4-year-olds to care for and to put on the face for them because I didn't want them going through what I was going through. So needless to say, that's when my systems, that's when I started videoing things, started presenting some of the information that you'll see in the blog post we have attached and saying, this is going to be my outlet because I needed something to document what I was doing, or mentally it started helping me to catalog a system mm-hmm. for myself to where I could feed the 4-year-olds how they needed to be fed, nurse the girls, and then most importantly, nourish myself because yeah. I knew I needed to be a fully intact superhuman to do this, to run this family. And that's where I started to develop things.
And I remember we've discussed previously how you felt postpartum. It's like you weren't naturally like super motherly, which was like mind blowing for me because I think you're like the ultimate mom. When I'm like, I think of Amy, I'm like, you got 2 sets of twins. You're so care. You can just tell how much you care about your kids and other moms, you know, like you genuinely want other moms to thrive and be healthy and feel good. Cause you're like, you've been there and like, you're like, it's possible. Can you talk a little bit about that difference postpartum, your first, and then versus when you had your second set of twins, the girls, did you have a better experience? Did you feel like because of the nutrition, the things you worked on in your home and the systems that you were able to enjoy that more?
I mean, that's such a good question. Because I know that I didn't have that motherly presence and I was more of a flatline steel wall because I couldn't emote. Yeah. I was completely catatonic at times. I had no energy to even laugh and smile with the babies. It was so hard for me to even sit on the floor and play with them and do tummy time. And that tears at my heart a lot because yeah. I missed that first year and a half. Because I was so dysfunctional. And then I started looking around and seeing, like, I see this at bus stops. I see moms. You can look in mom's eyes and see it. Like, it's not your fault. Like, let's yeah. change this. We have to change this. So yes, night and day. Because when I started to come around and my brain started to heal and I started to be able to absorb nutrients and I started to develop myself again, and I was like, this is literally the hardest thing I've ever done, but the most awesome. And joy, like an abundance of joy I've never experienced in my life, would start to come in. And like, you know, you still, even when the boys run off the bus and they're 13, I still get those like tingly butterfly feelings. Like I'm genuinely excited to see them. And I didn't have that initially. And I know it's because of depletion. And when mm-hmm. I work with moms now, and that's the first thing they say, my world is still filled with stress, but I don't feel it. I don't see it. It's not the same experience. And it's because your level of resilience goes up. Yeah. And I know you see that too.
Yeah. So, and I just think that's important. I think a lot of people will connect with that. And you could be, there's a spectrum, right? Sometimes we're not that extreme. Sometimes we're feeling like that on some days and not others. But deep yeah. down, I think a lot of moms know, like, something is off and dysfunctional. And I think that I know I could feel better and enjoy this more and have it not feel so hard. Motherhood's always going to be hard. It's going to be so amazing and it's going to be so hard. But when you're not taking care of yourself, you're not nourishing yourself, it's a million times harder. Cause again, you don't have that resilience. Your body can only hang on so long. We're going to talk about the practical stuff, the systems that you created. But before we get into that, I think a really important thing to cover is how can we change the culture within our home? And I think this is like when you have younger children, babies, I think it's easier to do this because mm-hmm. you're starting fresh basically, right? You haven't like, things are not as solidified yet. There's more room for flexibility. I think you can do that with older kids. It's possible. It's just harder. I've had clients that have done it. It is harder, but it's possible. Can you talk about like how we create the culture in our home and how you went through and just like shifted things slowly over time? We're not doing this overnight, anyone, in order to make those changes with food and your mindset around food.
Yeah. And know that this is coming from a mom to a mom. right? So this is, I am not a trained counselor. I'm not a child psychiatrist, but this is the system that I've used myself and then also taught other moms to use it. So take it for what it's worth and make it your own. So I also have a heavy science background and then a heavy knowledge of like what's going on inside. But I don't think you even need that because there are so many resources now. Just the abundance of information that you put out there, Amanda, we can take that and teach our kids. The things that my 8-year-olds know is they'll use terms like hydrate, or, you know,
I love it.
They know what their poop is supposed to look like. And they know if their poop is off, if it has cracks or if it's smooth. They need to know that. Yeah. And so that understanding of, they know they have to have their protein at every meal. They know they eat their protein first. So little things, when I first started with the boys, they learned right alongside me. Mm-hmm. And so I was, of course, learning at an accelerated rate, but I would talk to them. We would crack coconuts together. We talk about the medium chain triglycerides. Of course, that was the big thing back then. And we were talking about the fiber in the coconut. And how the oil is so good. And you can eat your meat off the bone because that's good for your joints. Where are your joints? Here are your joints. So if you have young kids, you can use really great tools. Like there's a great book called Are You What You Eat? And I'll send you the link. But it's such a great resource because it has, here's what raspberries do for you. Here's what all the red fruits and vegetables. And for little kids, every time they ate, we talked about it. And it wasn't to the point where it was like, you can only eat healthy foods, but we talked about, hey, when you go to a birthday party and there's all these red candies, maybe we avoid them. And this is why, because of how they make your brain feel after. If they would go in and have a monumental tantrum or they were way out of control, then we talk about, what are the things that you ate? What are the strategies that you can use to nourish yourself differently? These little things add up. And every instance I would start to bring these lessons in addition to how our play at the park was helping to, you know, support their bodies, support their brains, and use terms instead of nervous system, you'd use brain or something that they know. But now I think that if you have people that are listening that are like mine, that are preteens or that are in school, they're out of the kids started going to school and they started seeing kids open packages and I could no longer just, you know, cut them carrots or give them pistachios, where they saw kids opening chip bags or Teddy Grahams or whatever it was at that time. Like, why can't we have those? I want those. I also had to learn the hard way of saying, you know, there's got to be a place for things. Because otherwise, then you go off the rails and then you start to rebel. And then the kids are the weirdos in the corner that have the separate snacks. And that doesn't work either. Yeah. And that's what mine were. They had cans of sardines and they love sardines. But it was like, that's, you can't do that. And unfortunately, that's just the world that we live in. So the way that I started to shift it was, we said, you know, we can do as much as we can in the home. And then if we go somewhere, then whatever I can bring or swap, if it's appropriate for the setting, then we do so. But then we also think about, like, if we're at ball games or we're traveling, can we seek out restaurants? What are things that we look for? And they know, we look for things, places that have a grass-fed burger, usually the easiest, or that have gluten-free buns, or that we talk about what kind of oils do you fry your fries in? Those little things add up to huge things, because if we talk science, the kid's microbiome is going to dictate their brain health, which drives the entire household. You know, as being a mom, when your kid is dysregulated, you become dysregulated really quickly unless you're a robot. I am not one. And with multiple voices, if the kids are dysregulated in the house, that is a massive stressor too for your own health, especially if you're on a healing journey. So it makes sense to try to be inclusive of all these different values and teach them right alongside while you're learning.
And I think with little kids, they grasp so much more than we realize. Mm-hmm. One thing that I've done, you know, my daughter's only 18 months, but she's finally interested in cooking. Like, we have a little toddler tower that my husband made for her. And before, she was mostly just like climbing all over it, super safe, and enjoying it that way. But now she likes to come right up to the stove, and she's learned not to touch it and all that stuff, but she likes to mix stuff. She fakes putting spices in. It's the cutest thing ever, but she's much more interested, which has been great, because at this age, that 17, 18 months, I'm like, what happens with her food preferences completely changing.
Yeah.
It's insane how much it shifts. It's like slowed down a bit, but I was like, for a while, I was like, she's never gonna want to eat all the things that she's loved her whole life again. There was like a 6-week period, but then she started to get interested in cooking. My sister has done that with my nephew forever. She loves to cook, and he was really picky for like almost a whole year from that age 2 to 3. And I was like, just get him cooking with you. If they're involved, I let my daughter choose between the vegetables at dinner. I'm like, which veggie do you want? You know, and I just gave her two options. And I know she's so little, and people will probably, I don't know, but think it's crazy, but they really do. They're already a human with their own personality and their own feelings and their own everything. And if you can like include them in things and give them that autonomy, I think it makes a difference, because she's already like past that picky stage for the most part. But I wasn't going to like force her to try to get interested in cooking. I was like, if you want to play, go play. But I was happy when she did, because I was like, wow, this has really made a big difference in her wanting to eat these foods. And I think that's something that you can definitely do. I know it can make things messier. It can slow down the process sometimes. And there are certain things where I'm like, you're not doing that. But even just having them part of it, involved in it, I just think that makes a big difference too. And that's like what I'm saying when I think of like, what is the culture in your home like? Like, do you give your kids choice when it comes to their food? Mm-hmm. How mad would you be if someone constantly told you what you were going to eat? I'm like, so I'd be so mad. So it's like, how can we give them options, even if they're small? And again, explaining things to them, like when we cook, we talk about like, oh, we're using butter. This is where butter comes from. And it seems so silly, but I'm telling you, like, they take it in and they'll remember. And then like, I remember one time my nephew, he just like spits out this phrase, and I'm like, how do you even know that phrase? And it's because it's like, my sister was explaining something to him while they were making food, and he remembered it. And it may have been like 6 months ago, and now it's popped back in, but it does make a difference. And I think involving your kids in creating the culture and seeing like, what do they like? Every kid's going to be different. Maybe some kids don't want to get involved in cooking. Maybe they want to help you do the dishes. Whatever it is, like, how can you bring everyone in the family into that, the food choices, where, how we make our food, why it's important? I think that makes a world of a difference.
Yeah. I mean, the girls, if anybody's been following me for a while, I have so many videos of Annabelle and Madeline cooking with me. The ones with the boys are really, really old. But I have so many, if you've ever seen any of those, and where they're peeling pomegranates and they're peeling the carrots. I mean, and they have their, you know, just the sandwich knives, I don't know what they're called, just like the regular knives that are a little serrated. And they're cutting everything, and I'll ask them, which one is the heart? I mean, Annabelle knows how to butcher a beef heart, and she's amazing. And she can pull everything apart. I had a live the other day, and I was watching it just with her the other day, and she's like holding it up. She's got her finger in the aorta, pulling apart the atrium, pulling apart all the vessels. And even my anatomy teacher was like, oh, geez. But that, you know, I brought them to the farm where we get our, where we, and they met the cows that they would later have their burger. I mean, and they know Mr. Roger, the farmer, and everything on their plates, they always have 2 or 3 vegetables, but it's not like I'm, you know, everything is, sometimes they're frozen and, you know, I'll go to Costco and get them. It's not like I'm in the Ozarks, you know, cultivating all these things. We have a huge garden and they know how to plant seeds, and every year we start our seeds, and every year they plant them, and they know how to trim lettuce, and they know how to pull herbs, and they know how to, stem a kale. But you can do this. I'm just in suburban America. And so it was just like you said, Amanda, like they are at the countertop helping me. And it was more labor intensive, but it kept me on my game. And that's what this was about, was like developing all these systems to where it was, they know to look at the whiteboard for what's on the menu this week. And they had a say in that. What's our protein going to be? And so that one day my goal is that it'll be secondhand to them, where they say, oh man, I am not feeling great. You know, like I can't think clearly, I'm constipated, and they'll automatic reflexively go back to, what am I eating? And I think that's pretty awesome that we can, as moms, instill this just through little habits that we're doing. So I have a bunch of blog posts that I share, but like there's One, feeding kids a massive job that's 100% necessary. And I go into pretty big detail about principles that I had as I use the litmus test when you're going through. And as kids get older, you're looking at different products, different packages, but then also thinking now about budget. And I can't do all the organic bars. How do I make that at home? How do I have time to make it at home? How do I freeze it? You know, all of those things we've talked about, freezers and the importance of investing in a freezer, a dehydrator, but lots of little things that we can do as moms. And these are all in these blog posts that I've shared with you that are just simple things that you can just start doing consistently, and you save money now and then medical bills later. You know, mindset for yourself now, and reduce overall stress in the household, because when everybody's in a fed state and absorbing their food, it's amazing how much better all of us feel and function.
And I think, and one thing I think is so, I mean, obviously you have boys, but with the girls especially, being able to teach them like the, even the bowel movements and like, what's your poop supposed to look like? It is so simple, but it's so important, because, and boys obviously have to worry about this too. I feel like, especially now with social media, but with girls especially, they're going to get inundated as they get older with these messages around food. And if I think if you can create a strong foundation with the connection with what you're eating and how you feel, how your period goes, do you have really bad cramps, all that kind of stuff, how can you connect those things without obsession? You know, of course, like, we don't want kids to be obsessed about with food. It's more, but I think it's giving them the power, because they're going to get exposed to this stuff eventually. And I would
it happens really early.
I can't, like, I'm sure it's incredibly early now too. It's
like
probably
first grade.
Yeah. That's in, as well, just think about how many, I know so many women, myself included, that spent a good majority of their life dieting. And so that's going to rub off on your kids, especially if you don't really have a ton of awareness around the things that you're saying about yourself, about food in front of your kids. They absorb all those things. So I think it's just another thing to, cause I get a lot of questions about like teens and stuff like that. I'm like, this is the kind of stuff that you'd want to focus on with teens, like teaching them about their bodies and how food can affect them. But I think just making, you know, just not doing it with obsession, but just educating them and empowering them, right? You want them to feel like they know their, because I always say, you know your body best. Kids, they know their body best, especially if from a young age, you can help them connect with it instead of like ignoring it and turning it off or not talking about certain things. So when it comes, so we talked about creating the culture in your home. I think it's like making slow shifts is the best way to do it. I know everyone's different though. And some people are like, I just need to change the things and work on it and figure it out. I think when you have kids though, it's probably easier to make slower shifts, but whatever works for you, and having the conversation with your spouse and saying, like, educating them, which can be difficult. And sometimes, especially if you're really depleted and you're like, I don't want to have to explain this, send them a podcast, send them something that resonated with you that you think is going to be easy for them to understand, and be like, I need you to do this work. Like, when I wanted to have a home birth, I sent my husband a million things and I was like, educate yourself, because I do this for a living and I don't want to explain all this stuff to you over and over. Like, you read this and then we'll talk. And, you know, it was just like another thing. I was like, I don't want to have to carry this whole mental load. And moms do that. And I understand why. We make a lot of important decisions for our families, but I'm very much like, my husband is incredibly involved, and I want him to be part. I don't want him to just go along with it. I'm like, I want you to have an opinion. I want you to care. I want you to care what our kids eat, what we eat. And he definitely does. But like that, you know, that took time. So I think that's another big part about creating the culture. Usually it's the husband that maybe it takes a little bit longer to get him on board. That's okay. But I think providing resources that you learn from, they can learn from, hopefully they want to learn. And then when it comes to taking action, you know, it's meal planning. And I know that some people hate that. And I think there's a million different ways to do it, but do you want to talk a little bit about some of the foundations of starting to have some meal planning? And it doesn't mean, you know, making all your food on a Sunday. If anything, it's more like just having a plan that you can implement throughout the week. But can you talk about some basics of that and how to keep it simple?
Yes. One of the blog posts I had was the mommy hack one, make the most of your time in the kitchen, 3 recipes. Okay. And it was by how to make the most of like your chopped vegetables. Cause that's the thing that makes the most, cause usually we're hiding vegetables at that the stage. I think I have a video of Annabelle or Madeline helping me chop them, but we had like meatballs, and I make so many meatballs where all the vegetables are hidden in the meatballs. And honestly, I'm hiding the vegetables more for my husband to eat them than for my kids. But at that point I was just kind of going along, so everybody ate the same thing, and how to chop them once and then use it in three different things. So it was like in a sardine salad, which is a whole nother conversation. Yes, you can eat sardines. No, they're not terrible. You can mix them so they are palatable. And, also the same with organ meat. Like we can make it work so that, you know, it's hidden. And so if we think about basics, I don't get too nuanced here, about how to take like base recipes, whether it's, making muffins or making banana bread to save money on snack products. Because, you know, as your daughter gets older and you have to go different places, it's handy to have, say, pull a muffin out along with a beef stick. And then you have everything kind of in the muffin that you know that she needs along with the beef stick, and then a piece of fruit. But learning some of those basic recipes and then just being able to make tweaks to them. So if you make a basic banana bread bar, and then you can add in different things, different types of nuts or seeds or change out flours, things like that. But as far as meal planning goes, my best strategy is always start around the protein and then get everybody in the habit of eating leftovers, whether it's leftovers for lunch or leftovers for dinner, or we're going to take these in a thermos to school. This, because lunch matters too. Lunch does not just have to be a bag of chips, an apple, a cookie, and a sandwich. It can be leftovers. And so starting to introduce those concepts will save you so much time and effort to where then when you're cooking, you don't just make, if you have a family of four, you don't just make four servings, you'll make 12 servings, or you'll make 16 servings so that you have two lunches and two dinners that you can utilize that one recipe for. So when I write it out on my whiteboard, which used to be in olden times, a chalkboard, then I would write it out Monday through Wednesdays. A roast with carrots, mashed potatoes, and strawberries. And that's on the board. And then you do the next 3 days or you do the next 2 days. So I would say hands down, meal plan it. And I always do it around what's on sale, what kind of meats are on sale, or what have I got from US Wellness Meats, or what do I know is at the farmer's market? What's available, what's on sale at Costco this month? You know, those kind of things that you can look at. And then the other thing that's most important is, especially during like the stage that I'm in, and then you're always in running a business, is you've got to think about how much time you have to execute these beautiful plans, because it may be slow cooker for like a month straight if you have just a huge push, and that's fine too. It's fine that it's just different cuts of a roast. That's fine too. It doesn't always have to be these new beautiful recipes. But looking at, okay, Wednesday afternoon, I know I'll have a couple of hours to do something for Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So consider that in your meal plan for when you're going to be able to do it. And actually on my whiteboard, I'll write out a task list next to the day. So Wednesday's meal is flounder, rice, and asparagus. Well, then, but I got to prepare for Thursday because Thursday I'm going to be gone to work. I got to do that Wednesday. Does that make sense? So like, yeah. I'll just like you would do for a business or your planner, for work. That's the way I looked at my meal plan, was this is like my task list. And then that's how everything kept going. And then anytime I had an opportunity, I would batch it. So I'd make two casseroles instead of one because I knew next week is going to be really busy and I'll just pull it out of the freezer.
Yeah.
So the more ahead of the game we can stay on food, the more money we save, again, now, and then later when our kids, you know, don't have health issues because we've been nourishing them, or we reduce the risk of the health issues. And then ourselves too, that we're staying ahead of our health because we're nourishing our bodies and we're not going to start running on cortisol and adrenaline and having dysregulated sleep and so on.
And sometimes this can feel incredibly hard. Like my husband's deployed right now. When he first left, I was like, very in a food rut because it was like, now everything is on me. all of, you know, caring for Eliana 24/7, trying to work, find time to work during the day. And then I'm like, and I have to feed us with no help. Cause my husband is incredibly, he's like super dad. He's an amazing cook mm-hmm. and he loves to cook. He loves to cook with Eliana. He's so hands-on and involved that like when he's gone, it's like, whew. Sometimes I'm like, I wish you were not so helpful so that when you left, it would be like, not a big deal. But it was like a huge shift. And she was like, she turned 15 months. It was like, she changed a ton and developed a ton in a short period of time. Her taste buds changed. I'm like, how on earth am I supposed to do this? Mm-hmm. To me, like it really just came down to cooking very simple meals. And I just didn't do a ton ahead of time. I was like, there was no time to really prep. I'm like, so how can I make the meal as easy as possible so that it doesn't require prep? And I did a post recently sharing, I think it was like 4 or 5 recipes that are like,
oh, I saw that.
Simple, easy ingredients. You should be able to find them at any grocery store. And it's like, you basically just make them your own. But that's basically all we've been eating. And honestly, it like got me out of that food rut. Cause I was like, oh, okay. So it doesn't have to be stressful. And she does better with more simple meals. I think kids do better when food is a lot simpler. Sometimes I think it's like, we make these crazy recipes. Like I remember I made this recipe and I was like, she's gonna tear this up. She didn't like it. And I was like, I just made this whole thing like literally because I thought you were going to crush this meal and she didn't even want it. And so that's when it's like another reminder that it's like, it doesn't have to be fancy and it can be very fun to make those kinds of recipes and indulge and everyone loves it, but it doesn't have to be that way. And it's like, I love like the Cook Once Dinner Fix cookbook. Mm-hmm. If you want something where it's not a ton of prep, because Cassie Joy is great. She's got like that Cook Once Eat All Week, but it's a lot of prep on a Sunday. I could never do that now. Mm-hmm. But the Cook Once Dinner Fix, it's like you make one protein that you use for 2 different meals. So if you're someone that's like, I don't think my kids are going to eat the same meal like 2 to 3 times in 1 week, then maybe you pick the same protein, you prepare it, but then you make like shredded chicken. Like you can make that into like tacos or some sort of like taco dish and season it that way. And then you could do like a pulled like barbecue type chicken with sweet potatoes for another meal. And they can be 2 completely different meals. So it's like basic things like that, where again, like you made that chicken one night, so then you don't have to make the chicken the next night. You're just making a separate meal that you know that your kids are probably going to eat. It can be that simple. And I'll put mm-hmm. that cookbook, I'll link that one too. That's a good one. But I have like a million links for Amy's blog posts and stuff, but it's like that, even just like that kind of a premise, like pick your dinners, start with dinner. I think that's a great one to start with. Cause then if you make extra, you'll have lunch and then you can start thinking about what are we eating for breakfast? What are some breakfast, you know, I feel like that's a totally different based on like your schedule and stuff in the morning. Are you trying to get kids off to school? What do they like to eat in the morning? That sort of thing. How much time do you have? But it's like, just experiment and find what works for your family and don't feel like it has to be perfect. It doesn't. You don't have to make all your food from scratch. But like you said, I mean, kids' snacks are so expensive. Kid food, if you want to make money, get into the business of making anything for kids and you'll make a ton of money because it's like their products, they're just through the roof. It's so expensive. So like you talked about learning how to make muffins, bar, like banana bread bars, things like that, and freezing them, like that can be a big one. Do you have a blog for something like that?
I'll have to send you. I have a zillion of them. I make so many different versions of muffins.
Okay.
But really, here's a good secret for that. Just if your kids like banana bread, just look up and you want to avoid, say you're like, all right, I'm going to try this, go gluten-free. Just look up, put the word paleo in front of any type of muffin. And I guarantee you there's a recipe for it, like paleo pumpkin muffin. And then you'll get a whole bunch of them. My kid's got an almond allergy. I can't do almonds. Do pumpkin seed flour. Just get a bag of pumpkin seeds, grind it in a blender, and you have pumpkin seed flour.
Or oat flour. I mean,
or
I
oat flour.
Love,
yeah.
I usually make it. I don't buy it because it's really expensive. But if you grind up oats, it's like incredibly cheap.
Yeah, you can get the huge bag of organic oats at Costco and you can make your own oat flour. But those little things save so much money. And take that muffin recipe and turn it into a sheet pan and just spread it in a sheet pan, cut it into bars. I used to wrap them in wax paper and go through the whole nine yards. Now I freeze them individually and they go in a Ziploc bag and they pull them out. And then that's that. But when you have kids that are eating all day, it just takes you like one trip to Costco buying all the Z bars and everything else, which also have not so awesome ingredients when eaten consistently all the time that are not awesome for developing kids' microbiomes, and they're still growing, developing brains. Every once in a while, if they have a Z bar at a friend's house or they're, you know, you're in a pinch, fine. But all that stuff that we have is way tucked away for emergency purposes. Otherwise, our food bill would be $2,000 a month just in snack. And that's, nobody can sustain that.
Yeah.
And so I look at nutrition and food as also, and I tell this to them all the time, like, if you want to perform on the field, if you want to do well on your tests, if you want to sleep at night, and now the girls are learning about where babies come from. We're just talking about that. They're going to be nine. We found a great book for them. This is how like your hormones are developing, and it's what we're bringing in. And they have that knowledge base. But I look at that as an asset for myself too, as a mom and mom health, because it makes me feel good that I'm doing for them what I need to have done for me. And no, it's not easy and it's not perfect every day. It can't be, like, we can't. But it's as long as we're consistent with that messaging, it pays off hugely. And it's simple. Yes. All my recipes are very simple.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't have even to need a recipe to do it.
Yeah, I know. I'll like throw stuff together and I'll put it in my stories. People like recipe. I'm like, ooh, I didn't.
I know.
Like, keep track
I don't measure anything.
I'm so not even muffins. Bad.
I just kind of.
I know it's bad. I know people like, it's like, I understand baking can be such a science, but I'm like, I mean, I think there's some flexibility there. And some people are like, they need the recipe, and I get that. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's, I'm like, I could never slow down and like do that every single time I wanted to. I also have been cooking for a long time. And that's the other thing. If you can involve your kids and you create this culture in your home, that food is a positive thing. It can nourish your body. It can make you feel really good. It can also maybe not make you feel so great. Teach them about that. The other big piece that they're going to get is they're going to learn how to cook. I mean, I cannot tell you how many people, adults, do not know how to cook. And I don't blame them. Obviously, if you don't, I grew up with my mom cooking everything because we didn't have the money. Like, we never ate out. If we got fast food, all my friends ate fast food all the time. I was always so jealous. Now I'm older. Obviously, I'm like, thank God we did not do that. My mom's like, we just couldn't afford it. Like, if we could afford it, we definitely would have given it to you more, but we could not afford it. And I was like, wow, I just like didn't, I just thought we were like really healthy. But it's like, I learned how to cook that way. Cause I constantly saw my mom cooking. I, you know, as you get older, then it's like, all right, this is your job tonight. You know, when my mom went, she used to have a home daycare and then she went back to like an office job and like we had to make dinner and we knew how, and it wasn't a big deal. And I'm so grateful for that because it does make that less stressful. So if you're listening and you're like, I don't really know how to make these things, I'm not a great cook, that is another big barrier. And I would really focus on simple recipes. And I, like, I've had clients that didn't really know how to cook, and we'd be like, let's make this one recipe this week and master it. And then you can like experiment later. And we would make one new recipe like every week, and they'd learn how to make like stir fry. And then they'd learn how to make meatballs or something. And then it was like using a crock pot or an instant pot for things. And I remember just being mind blown that people didn't know how to cook. So that's like another gift that you can give your kids when you implement this kind of culture in your home.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to nursing school in 7 weeks. My kids, I got to know, and we've been implementing for the last 6 months, especially with one of my boys who, God bless, he is going to need some guidance. The other one is fine, but this one, we mastered the smoothie and he's mastered making his breakfast. But I want them to have this because guess what shifts when I'm not here? Dad's working full time, their food. And I refuse for that to go out the window when I'm in school. So they have been, we have talked about this and how we're not just going to live on snacks, and I'm going to have as much planned ahead as I possibly can, but I don't know that road.
Yeah.
But having that and giving them that, those tools, and Annabelle came up to me the other day and she was like, even though you really annoy me when you're always talking to me about all this stuff, and everything seems to be about health, I actually think it's kind of cool that I'm really good at soccer. And I know it's because my muscles are strong because of what I'm eating. Needless to say, she's humble. And then she'll say, and every time in science and we talk about the body, I know the right words to say, Mom. And everybody how old looks is she? At me. She's Nine? 8 going on 25. Oh my. And
good Lord.
And she'll be like, so I guess I kind of like it. And I'm really excited about you coming into my class and talking to my classmates about bones. And you may want to talk to them about food too. And I'm like, so they get it. And the cool thing is that then feeds my soul. And I think you'll find as a mom, when you start like getting, like, I'm very passionate about this, but as your passion starts growing and you start seeing changes in your health, because just like, I mean, like Amanda provides invaluable, like I followed you for so long back when I saw you doing like videos outside with your gym when you were CrossFitting. Yeah, yeah. Like that's how long ago that I was first introduced to your work. You've helped me change my life in a lot of ways. I'm so grateful for that. Just like many other mentors. So I definitely am so thankful.
And then we eventually got to meet because we both live in North Carolina.
I know. That was so cool. I was like, I'm just going to give this a try. I don't know. But I think that as women continue, especially moms, to follow your work and really understand that there are principles in the world that we just stick to because we're bombarded by all of these messages, and most of them are honed in on how do we become the women that we were, or how do we get our body back?
Yeah.
We need to focus on how do we function really well in life from a movement perspective, from a nourishment perspective, of course, hormonal. But then, hey, we've got another like 40, 50 years to look at once the kids are grown. And I refuse to be this sunken shell of a woman because I didn't put in my efforts now. So all this stuff collectively put together, you are doing so much to benefit yourself and just be super proud of every single effort, even if it seems very, very small. All of those things come together and all of a sudden you'll be like, whoa, I feel totally different.
And it's every season of life. Like we talked about birth, postpartum, and then having little kids as your kids get older, but then also like perimenopause and postmenopause. Yes. I often get questions, how do I set myself up for success? I'm like, it's all the things I'm always talking about.
Yes.
If you can do that and get yourself out of fight or flight, give your adrenals a break, give your thyroid a break, eat enough food, get outside, you know, all those things. Don't burn the candle at both ends. That's what's going to set you up for success. And I think I'm like, it's so interesting because I think that's also incredibly important when you're a mom, because that's like the quickest way to get into that burnout. Nothing really changes other than the fact that, you know, depending on your health history and how depleted you were, and your hormones, that of course is going to make the transition much harder. So it's like, if you can take care of yourself at all those ages, it's going to help you so much as you transition. And hopefully you can put that off. You know, so many women go through menopause in their like early 40s. And I'm like, oh, and that partially can be genetic. So don't ever feel shamed or guilty if you went through menopause early. That can 100% partially be genetic. But I still wonder about the environment of like their mom and what their nutrient status and their hormonal status was like and everything. But it's like, we have some control over that. We have, I think, a lot of control, depending on when we find this information and when we can implement it. But I mean, that can be something too. It's like, yes, we want to be thriving as moms. We want to have healthy kids that are going to grow up and be healthy. And then we want to be healthy. I always think about like, I have like weird family stuff. And so I'm like, I want to be there for Eliana. That's incredible. And like our new baby, her name's going to be Amaya. Like I want to be there for them, you know? And that's like so important to me. And like, that's a huge part of why I also make all these health choices. So it can like snowball into so many different things. Don't feel like you have to do, like, we don't do things the same. We do, you know, like we're different people. Like we implement things differently, but I'm hoping that with the information, all the links I'm going to share to Amy's blogs, I love like educating your kids. We're all going to do that in our own way, but like take the information, make it your own, leave whatever doesn't feel good for you, and then see like, how can you use this to support your health and your children's health? But you know, your health really, really matters as a mom. You dictate how regulated you are dictates how regulated your kids are.
Absolutely.
It makes a big difference.
Massive. Like,
yeah. So I just think that's something where we always put ourselves last, but mom's health really, really matters. It's going to make your kids healthier. And I don't know, don't feel overwhelmed with the information. I'm hoping that this helps you take action and just do it your own way. There's no perfect way to do it. It's just whatever feels best for your family and works for you guys.
And remember that I was told I would never regain my cycle. You're that axis is fried. You have ADD and ADHD. We don't grow out of that. Well, I don't take any medications for ADD and ADHD. And my brain works a lot better than it ever did. And I have a regular menstrual cycle each month and I ovulate every month. So.
And how old are you now? Do you mind? Are you okay with sharing that?
Yeah, I'm 44.
Yeah, you don't look 44. So I just like think it's important to, it's helpful to know, you know, it's like you're not some young 30 something mom that is doing like, oh, it's good. I just like often hear, well, like, I don't have the energy or I'm this age and stuff. And it's like, you can do it. Mm-mm. And you can, you're healthier now at this age than you were before you had kids, probably.
Yes. And every single one of my clients, I see it happen. It's like, it's not magic sauce. These, and they're not, you can do it. You can 100% do it. And I hope this was energizing to everybody because like, I'm so passionate about this, which is why I'm going back to school to bring this to one day patients. And I mean, just working in the hospital now and seeing it, there's so much wrapped around diagnosis or this is who you are. This is what you're destined to be. You're not. I mean, I am a completely different human being than I was 10 years ago. I wouldn't want that human being the mom to my kids. I needed to create her. And so everything I wanted her to look like, that's what those behaviors I embodied. And I just pretended like I was already her. And I did those things to make her. And then I'm still doing those things to whoever I will be 10 years from now.
Yeah. And it'll always be ever changing. And I feel like that's like the evolution of being a mom. It's like, you're not a mom. And then you go through this crazy transformation from like maiden to mother. And you're trying to figure out like who you are and balancing it all and still knowing yourself, but also like being just so, you know, overtaken by your love for your kids and stuff. It's like a crazy, crazy transition and evolution. But I mean, for me, I'm like, it's been the best thing of my life so far. Yeah. So it can be beautiful. It can be hard, but we just want to make it so that you're not in this fight or flight, you know, feeling or frozen state where you're like, I wish I could enjoy this more because everyone deserves to enjoy it. So is there anything else you want to leave people with? I'm going to link all your social media, your website, your millions of helpful blogs. I'll also put the cookbook I mentioned, that simple recipe post I have on Instagram, lots of resources for you all. And anything else we should share? I feel
about
like
about a thousand other things.
I know. We'll do a part two. We'll see what questions you guys have. We'll do a part two. Yeah. But I feel like we wanted to give this foundation to you all, give you a starting point.
I think the biggest thing is we didn't even touch on movement, but the movement piece is a huge one. Another time. But thinking about you know, all that you have in your world now, just continue to put those efforts forward because it will pay off. And I'm going back to school. So as far as my one-on-one availability, it's just a little bit different for the next couple of years. I'm still seeing clients, but on a limited basis. But I do have a lot of cool resources like the Essential Energy Guide for Moms that's out there. That's a way too long. The freebie for you, but as is my nature, information overload. And then I'll still keep showing up on social media to drop some information.
She's a great follow. I love when your kids are making food and stuff with you. And just same thing, like lots of simple tips on like how to be healthy. It's like very supportive if you're a mom and you're wanting to make changes or feel inspired. And then we are going to have Amy inside Patreon to get to that movement piece. We're going to do a class on how to move the pelvic ring. And modify that rib cage, something that gets crushed, your fascia changes, pregnancy and postpartum. I'm like, I think any woman, you definitely don't have to have a child to need this type of work. I think if anything, do it before if you can. But we're going to do that class with Amy in December. So make sure you join Patreon if you want to join us there. But thank you so much for being here, sharing your brain, and just sharing your passion, Amy. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Amanda. It was really a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Are You Menstrual podcast. If you want to support my work, please leave a review and let me know how you like the episode. This lets me know like what you guys want more of, less of. I read every single one and I appreciate them more than you know. If you want to keep learning, you can get access to the bonus episode and additional resources on patreon.com/hormonehealingrd. I'd love to have you in there. Thanks again, and I will see you in the next episode.